minister. And so she's got a lot of thoughts now that she's working with that perhaps she hadn't worked with before. But it's an awful lot of studying that this kid is doing. And I'm really proud of our Barbara.
The choir was actually going to sing first, but I think maybe we'll sing at the end of my talk, if that's okay. So, is that okay?
It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Now that I'm in seminary, my Bible is bigger and weighs about 20 pounds. I need to balance things out. So it's the Christmas season, and for me, I haven't had a whole lot of time to really focus on the beauty of the true message of Christmas. Some of you know me really well, and some of you, like Felicia, I just met a few days ago. So those of you who know me well are just going to say, yeah, same old stuff. But kind of a new spin on the same old stuff. If you had told me a year ago that my income was going to drop less than half, I was going to go into debt at the tune of another $20,000 a year, and that my life would no longer be my own, and I would like it, I would have said, you're crazy, because a year ago I had a full-time job, and I had a nice balance to my life doing things here at church and helping to raise two precious daughters and gardening and all kinds of wonderful things that had a balance to my life. I didn't think I was going to have it turned upside down. But you know, it's interesting in the New Testament where they talk about how the angels appeared to Mary, and the angels appeared to Elizabeth and Zechariah, and we'll start with Elizabeth and Zechariah real quick, and Millie tells that story far better than I ever will, but, you know, Elizabeth was in her 90s. She certainly didn't think she was going to have kids, and that thing had passed her by. So, surprise, surprise, she was now going to be pregnant with John the Baptist. Mary got another surprise. You know, she was engaged, but she wasn't married yet, nor was, if we take the Bible as it's written, nor had she had sexual relations yet. But surprise, surprise, suddenly she was going to be carrying a child. So for me, to compare myself to them is maybe a stretch, but I'm going to do it anyway tonight, because truly, if you had said to me a year ago that Barbara, next year when you're 52, you're going to enter seminary, you're going to spend a couple times a year sleeping in a convent, you're going to reduce your sleep to 3 or 4 hours a night, and you are going to give birth to some new career and a new way to serve God, I would have thought you were a little bit crazy, because I liked my life just fine. And I'm sure Elizabeth and Mary had their expectation of what the year was going to be like for them as they looked ahead at their lives. And, you know, sometimes it's turned upside down. And sometimes we're asked to reappraise and trust. And, you know, if you read the New Testament and the different accounts of Mary and Joseph getting word that they're going to have these new challenges and these new opportunities to serve God, it kind of makes them sound like they were perfect and went along for the ride and said, okay, you got it. But I'm sure as humans, they struggled, because certainly I'm here to tell you, I'm struggling with having my life turned upside down. I don't have the time for my children that I once did. I don't have time to cook or clean or go grocery shopping. Don't have money for that either, but that's good, I guess. Like Mary and Joseph, all my needs are being met, but I sure miss sleep. They, you know, when I let me backtrack for those of you who don't know the full story. I worked for the same company for 25 years, and in June of this year, my salary and my hours were cut in half, and I lost my health insurance, which was a shock after 25 years with the same company. But I have this precious friend, Sherry, who is in the second row, who a couple years ago I had dinner with, and I was probably complaining about this job that I've had for 25 years. And she said to me, well, if you could do anything, what would it be? And I said, you know, to become a hospice chaplain. And she's like, well, why don't you do it? And I'm like, well, I got this great life. I got this job. I got 5 weeks of vacation a year. I'm putting some money in the bank. I'm raising kids. I'm busy at church. I've got this wonderful life. Why would I upset it? So she moves away to the East Coast, and this is part of God's plan, is to bring her back for a little vacation mid-May, and I didn't even know she was coming back to town. And the day I got word that my career was tumbling down, I ran into her that night right here, and she could tell something was wrong. She's like, what's wrong? And I told her, and she said, do you remember what you said to me a year ago? And I said, yes. And, you know, this is divine, God's divine plan to bring her back from Maine, 3,000 miles, and put her right in front of me for 3 or 4 hours after I got this news, and for her to give me this message. God is saying, why not do what has been in your heart? And I'm like, well, I'm not so sure I really want to do that, you know? I was challenged, and I started doing research and realized I needed to go to seminary for 3 years in order to get a new job. And so at age 52, my life is turned upside down. Well, I found a school that would accept me, and they sent me a letter a week before it all started, and they said, oh, by the way, each class will take about 20 hours a week, and you're taking 4 of them. So what are you planning to give up in your life to accommodate 80 hours a week? This is after I sent off the first check. I'm like, you're kidding. 80 hours a week? Okay, they're just trying to scare me, so I'll take it seriously. Well, it really is about 80 hours a week if you do it right. There's a lot of words in this book. Millie knows most of them really well. Many of them, how about that? And I'm... You know, I'm in seminary. It's affiliated with the Methodist Church, but they have people from all denominations, but I'm their first spiritualist. So I write these papers every night until about 2 or 3 and send them off into cyberspace where my classmates in each class read them, and they post their papers and I read theirs, and we have to critique each other's. They critique everybody gets critiqued by 20 other people for each class, and then you have to respond to their critiques. So what it's making my head and heart do is really say and get down on my knees, God, what do I believe? Because there's a wide divergence of opinions of how to read some of these stories. And being the only spiritualist that's ever graced their door, part of me has been fearful. Now, is it the same kind of fear that Mary faced as she was pregnant without the ring on her finger? You know, she could have been stoned for how she appeared. No, I'm not going to get stoned in seminary. Probably not. But I would really hate to get, you know, 2 or 3 years into this really rigorous, life-changing, turning everything upside down world and then be ridiculed or thrown out. So I have some fears about this, you know. But like Mary, I feel like God is calling me to give birth to something. And I think He's calling all of us at different times in our lives to give birth to something that serves His greater purpose. And we can argue and say, you know, Jane and I know this song, It's an old song from the 60s written by a nun. And she uses, I can't remember which Bible story it is, but the refrain is, I cannot come. Sorry, God, I can't come. I'm busy. I've got crops in the field. I've got people to take care of. I've got all these things. I can't come. And for many, many years, where I had this inkling of what I wanted to do with my life, I was also at the same time sending a stronger message, I can't come. I can't do this. You know, why would I goof up everything that I've worked to build in terms of stability? Well, God made sure that I answered the call by taking away half my job and turning my life upside down in a way that he did to Mary. And Elizabeth, I'll compare myself more to her because I'm closer to her age. Not quite 90, but I'll tell you, I feel like it right now. This has been a really humbling experience the last 4 months. I've learned how little I know. I've learned that I can't do it alone. I've learned that I have really high expectations for myself, that this is old stuff, that I feel like I have to get straight A's. I don't know how to work for a B or a C, and it has made me a mess. I can tell myself intellectually, when I go to apply at San Diego Hospice 3 years from now, they're going to say, did you get the degree, not did you get straight A's? I can tell myself that intellectually. But at 3 a.m, where I'm trying to write this perfect paper that is a reflection of my faith in God, I can't give less than 100%. But I can't give 100% every day when I'm only operating on 3 hours of sleep either. So things have suffered. I'm behind on 2 out of 4 classes. Everything was due a week ago, and I still have more papers to write that I'll probably finish in the next 48 hours. And part of me says, then I'll get 1 week off, and then I start again on January 3rd. And part of me wants to quit. And I'm sure there were times when Mary said, I'm not sure about this pregnancy thing and riding on the back of a donkey to this place. I don't know where I'm going to find lodging among strangers. I didn't ask for this. But the thing about spiritualism is we believe that before you're born into the body, there are certain lessons, there are certain challenges that you have asked for, and you kind of put on your life's blueprint, even if once you're born, you don't remember them in a human capacity. So I can grouse and say I didn't ask for this, but I think on some level I truly did. So who can I blame for being exhausted? Nobody, except it's about sometimes we have to let go of what we think is our security. And I'm reminded of Jesus gathering together his disciples. He didn't pick 12 guys who were the best and the brightest, who had it all together. They were kind of a motley crew. And yet they were called to do some great things. And I'm feeling pretty motley right now. I have, I've had to really get to a place of humility because certain things that I prided myself on, I can't do right now. I'm showing my warts, I've always been vain about my eyes. And when I put my contacts in and I do the eye makeup, I have beautiful eyes. I can't even get a contact anywhere near an eyeball that stared at a computer screen for 23 hours in one day. There's just no way. These glasses are 23 years old, but they're only ones that will allow me to see the page and see the computer, and I've had to let go of some of that vanity. I started this year in January, gung-ho, I'm going to lose weight, and I did. I lost 65 pounds. By June or July, I was looking really pretty good. Then my life turned upside down, and I started this life, and the 65 pounds are coming back on. I can't hide that. I might as well just state it plain. You know, there are things that are suffering that I'm not able to devote my life to the way I once was. And yet, it's hard to explain, but I am learning. I am learning so much. Millie has been my teacher for 20 years, and I've learned so much here. But being challenged by professors and peers who don't know and love me, being challenged every single night to write and explain why I believe what I believe, how I find truth, how I know what I know what I know, to people who are saying, prove it to us. That has taught me so much. I've taken 4 classes this semester that, in a way, sound like they're not connected. For 2 semesters, I have to take the Old Testament. So I finished my first semester. Boy, there's some wild things in that Old Testament. Maybe some Sunday morning I'll give you insights into a few of those things. But then I have another class called Foundations of Church Renewal. And it looks at how in the 21st century a lot of people don't think the Christian faith is relevant anymore. You know, we've got Facebook, we've got a lot of things that are pulling our young people, our future adults, into other directions, and some of them don't think they're going to need a spiritual foundation. Others are finding that they do. And so this class was about how do churches, no matter if they're big ones or small ones, but how do they make the teachings of Jesus Christ relevant to the people in the 21st century? How do we find a way for this to still matter 2,000 years after the birth of Christ? My third class is ethics. I thought, I'm an ethical person. I'm a moral person. This will be easy. It hasn't been easy. I'm looking for a Kleenex because I'm dripping. But we had to start with Aristotle in that class and work our way up. And I'm in the middle of writing this huge paper about the ethics of accepting gay people into your congregation with love and respect. To me, that seems like a no-brainer. I don't see why I have to really explain that. But on the other hand, some people don't get it, so I'm being called to start with Aristotle and every philosopher, theologian since, and defend my point of view that Christ's banquet is open to everyone. So I hope to finish that paper in the next day, because it's already a week late. My fourth class, my last class, what is it? Pastoral Care and Counseling, which should be the class that's most pertinent. Well, it is the class most pertinent to my goal, which is to become a hospice chaplain. And it's another class I'm behind on. And I've realized that as I wrote a paper at 3 a.m. for that one, it was called Who Cares? Who Provides Pastoral Care to the Pastor? Who takes care of Millie as she's busy taking care of everybody else? God. But, she and I and all of us have to learn that we need to speak up for when we need help. And that's such a hard one. You know, with Facebook now, I can, in my panic, post I need your prayers because I'm losing it here. And I've done that a couple times in the last 4 months. And I've gotten this outpouring of love. It's helped me so much. But I've really come to realize in these 4 months is that the pastors need care too. About a week ago, I had a meltdown, and my 8-year-old came home from school, and she saw tears, and she said, you know, I used to be able to say, oh, these are happy tears, and she would buy it. She doesn't buy it anymore. She's, who hurt you? Well, nobody hurt me, honey. It's just that I'm overwhelmed, and so she's being the mom. She's hugging me and saying it's going to be okay, and kids aren't supposed to see their parents cry. That was something I taught myself early as a child. And I don't think congregants, I use that word a lot in papers now, you're all congregants. Congregants aren't supposed to see their pastors in moments of weakness. But you know what? I think Mary and Joseph had moments of weakness. I think Millie and I, Reverend Jeff, I think all of us have moments of weakness. And it's okay if they slip through. Some of them are wetter moments than others. Yeah, it's the humidity. So I say all this because I think Mary, even though I'm staring at Luke and she has this wonderful song of praise, and she just sounds like the saint that she is. My soul magnifies the Lord and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. I believe those things too. And some moments in the last 4 months I've been able to say, I'm rejoicing in this experience. But I think Mary also had tears and was overwhelmed, as I am tonight. So, I'm sorry. I ask all of you to be gentle with yourselves when you have a moment like this. To be loving and gentle with those in your lives who are being called by God to do something that they didn't really want to do initially. And when you get the call, it might not mean selling everything and moving to Africa as a missionary. It might mean taking the last $20 bill out of your wallet, though, and giving it to a homeless person. You just don't know. And if you, in that human side, say, God, I really don't want to, but I know you're asking me to, be gentle with yourself, because that human side is real. It's valid. And as Millie would tell us, you know, we're not perfect yet. If we were, we wouldn't be here. So I stand here imperfect, loving and appreciating all of you, and wishing you a blessed Christmas. Yeah.
To be a hospice minister. They won't honor our ministry with this, what we have here. If I wanted to be a hospice minister, I would have to go and take their course at $50,000. Something wrong about that.